Hi, this is Corey Heidelberger. It's Thursday, July 6th, 2017, and you're listening to the Dakota Free Press Podcast. Co-host Spencer Dobson is taking a week off, so in this solo production, I bring you my speech to the District 22 Democratic Forum, which took place today in Huron, South Dakota, at the lovely Huron Events Center in the Crossroads Inn downtown. District 22 Democratic Forum leader Chuck Roth and his fellow Democrats from Beadle and Kingsbury County invited me to come talk about, well, whatever current events struck my mind. So I went to Huron this noon and spoke to a couple dozen good Democrats about what we Democrats can do to win more elections in 2018 and the issues, the policy matters that we can focus on to make those victories a reality. Here's the audio of my speech, followed by our lengthy question and answer and comment section from the audience.
Okay, and Dakota Free Press blogger, Corey Heidelberger.
Let me take a moment, make sure my phone is shut off. I don't want to take any calls while this is going on here. Because nobody more important is going to want to talk to me than the folks in this room for the next half hour or so. Well, let me see if I can make about 15 minutes worth of wisecracks and remarks and such, and then I will more than happily take questions. Because as you know, if you've read the blog, Dakota Free Press, I try to write on there every day. I certainly find lots of things to go on and on and on about, and I write longer blog posts than some of the blog experts, if there are such things, say a guy ought to. They say that, you know, they, the experts on blogging, on getting more people to click your site, say that good blogging depends on, making lists. Top 10 lists, and have cute pictures, preferably of puppies, and don't say more than 200 words. I've probably already overdone that in my remarks right here. But if you've read my blog, you know, if I get into a topic and I think it's worth 500 or 1,000 or 3,000 words, I'll do it. And search engine optimization, to heck with that. Who cares? But as much as I enjoy writing, I also enjoy the conversations that happen on the blog in the comments section, where anybody can come in, except for a couple people that I really don't like and don't find constructive, where almost anybody can come in and leave a comment and get in the conversation and talk to each other about what's going on. So, I burned up a minute on that. Let's go with 14 minutes. The hopeful thesis of this talk that I'll give you today and give to the press, so they're going to hear what I say, so I'll be held accountable. Oh my gosh, more open than the White House right here. The hopeful thesis, and I say that in two ways. I hope this is what the speech turns out to be. We'll see what happens, but it's also my hopeful thesis because I'm always hopeful. I'm going to talk about some things about what we Democrats can do to win next year in 2018. I'm going to talk about issues we can bring up. I'm going to talk about approaches we can take to winning elections. Now, of course, the warning that has to be given is I'm the last guy to stand here and tell anybody how to win an election because I haven't won one yet. I ran for school board twice back in Madison. I got fourth place the first time. I got third place the second time. There were only two seats, though, so that didn't help. I ran for legislature last year up in Aberdeen in District 3 against Al Nostrom. And I'm getting better. I got second place that time. That's Senate. There's only one winner, so I still haven't cracked the ceiling there. But we're working on it. We're working on it. Even so, I mean, I'm a guy who knows a lot about getting beat. I coached debate in Montrose, for Pete's sake, a school of 80 kids on a good day when it wasn't harvest season. And we went up against kids from Lincoln, Sioux Falls, Lincoln, and Watertown, and Aberdeen in debate. And I tell you, we probably got beat more often than we won. I know a thing or two about getting beat, but I know a lot about fighting the good fight and taking on what seems to be insurmountable challenges. And I believe even more so this cycle than I did last cycle, that we Democrats have a lot of good chances, especially here in South Dakota. So I'm going to talk about some issues that I think, well, I'm going to talk about approaches we can take, and then I'm going to talk about issues that I think we can win on. I won't talk much because, hey, this is the choir I'm singing to. I think everyone around me is a registered Democrat, or at least can stand to be around Democrats. So you don't need me to tell you everything that's wrong with the health care bills. You don't need me to tell you everything that's wrong with the current administration's approach to elections and letting the Russians decide who becomes president. You probably don't need me to tell you that all this nutty stuff about immigration is way off track. But I am going to talk about how I think we can approach each of those issues as Democrats here in South Dakota, how we can approach them with the passion and with conviction that we're right and that the party of Trump The party of Al Nostrum, the party of Roger Chase, the party of Christy Nome and Marty Jackley are wrong on those key issues and how we can present ourselves as Democrats, unashamed, unabashed, unapologetic Democrats, as the smart, practical, reasonable, and patriotic alternative on those issues and so much more that I won't get to in 15 minutes, but off we go. First of all, as an overarching theme, whatever issues we choose, and I know that, you know, if we polled everybody around the table, we could probably find each one of us has some particular issue that matters more to us than it does to anyone else. Some people may find, I mean, education is important to everybody, but for some people, that's a primary issue. It's the only issue they want to talk about. For me, sometimes, you know, as a substitute teacher and a longtime debate coach and an English teacher and a math teacher and a physics, all the things I've taught, for me, yeah, I could campaign on nothing but education. Because if you don't get it, if you don't get education right, everything else falls apart. For other people, non-meandered waters. What the heck? There's our new vocab term of the year. There are people who are engaged in the political process now because they didn't get the fish on the lake they want to fish on. Or because they've got land that's flooded that they felt GF&P was pushing them around on from the other issue. And now non-meandered waters is their sole issue that's motivating them to be political. That's fine. What motivates people, that's up to them. So the three issues I'm going to talk about, I'm not saying that they're necessarily the biggest ones we can go for. I'm just going to contend that for certain, healthcare could be the only issue we have to campaign on. I think you can also make an argument that elections and election security and keeping the Russians out of our data and protecting our private data, that's another issue that Democrats who want can make a big case on. And I'll even talk about how immigration and Islamophobia, not that I want this to be a core defining issue in the election, and not that I think it should be a core defining issue in the election. But especially up in Aberdeen, I know there are enough people who are making a big, hairy, fear-mongering deal out of it that I think we Democrats need to be ready to respond on that. So let me take a crack at each one. Knowing that whichever issues we take on, we have to approach them, like I said, with passion and conviction and with no fear. We mustn't be afraid of stating our position confidently and boldly and saying in no uncertain terms that Christy, Marty, Al, Donald, you are wrong. And not just wrong, but you are bad for the country on the positions you're taking on all of those issues. You are risking the direct harm to insurance policyholders, to sick people, to old people, to young people, to everybody in America with the positions you're taking on these issues. Some people say that when I talk like that, I sound a little too radical. I actually had someone unsubscribe from my blog a couple weeks ago saying, oh, sorry, it's just too radical for me. I'm a peacemaker. I understand that sentiment. I'm obviously not good at it, but I understand that sentiment. We, as German, Norwegian, Lutheran, reserved, nice South Dakotans, we have this urge to just be nice and not have conflict, to be polite, to share our rhubarb pie and not make a fuss. I understand that. I grew up among Missouri Synod Lutherans, for Pete's sake. Germans and Norwegians, the both of them. But I also understand that when you've got a ruling party in the White House, in the Congress, in the governor's office, and in the legislature that proposes policies that are bad for our country, that undermine basic American principles, we don't have to pull punches. We can still say, here, have some rhubarb pie, and in the next moment say, you are dead wrong about this policy and we need to change it. We can still sit down and have lunch with Christy Nome or Marty Jackley, but look them in the eye and say, what on earth are you trying to take people's health insurance away from them for? Why would you do that? And by the way, would you like another piece of pie? We can do both. We shouldn't be afraid to share our pie. It's a good democratic principle, making sure everybody gets some pie. But we also mustn't be afraid to be completely honest about our principles. The fact that we Democrats stand for protecting people, protecting their health, protecting their welfare, protecting their vote, protecting their rights as Americans. We don't have to apologize for giving a darn about our fellow Americans and about our principles. So, the issues finally. Healthcare. As I thought about what to talk about today, I thought we could do the whole session on healthcare. I look at, you know, the Billy Sutton shirts that we have in the crowd here, and I was at Billy Sutton's announcement down in Burke, down alongside the river. Beautiful setting, beautiful announcement. As I listened to Billy talk about, you know, education and his work on teacher pay and his, you know, work, corruption, EB-5, gear up, you know, we've got lots of South Dakota issues. But honestly, I think if Billy wanted, he doesn't, but if he wanted, he could run his entire gubernatorial campaign on health care. Whoever we pick to run for House against Dusty or Chantel or maybe some other mystery candidate, they could run their entire run for Congress on health care. I think our legislators, our legislative candidates next year, could run an entire campaign on health care if they wanted. Because look what's happening. We have a Republican Party from Donald Trump on down, and I say Brandon, they're all Trump publicans. They're all backing him. They're all making excuses for him. They're all making excuses for this supposedly wonderful plan the Republicans had 7 years to work on to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They had 7 years to work on what Donald Trump has promised us, and this is key. Not that a Donald Trump promise is worth the paper that it might or might not be written on if anyone's there to record it. But if we take any of his words to have value, and I'm an English teacher, I believe words have value, so we're going to stick to this. Donald Trump promised this year we'd get insurance for everybody, better care, and cheaper care. Remember those words from the President of the United States. We're going to get better care. We're going to get cheaper care, and we're going to get insurance for everybody. Not one word of the plan that Kristi Noem voted for in May moves us toward insurance for everybody, better care, or cheaper care. Not one word of the plan that John Thune and Mike Rounds were maybe going to vote on last week if it hadn't all blown up, and now they're running around trying to make excuses for it, hoping Mitch McConnell can pull a tax cut rabbit out of his hat. Not one word of the Republican Senate plan gets insurance to everybody, gets them better care, or gets them cheaper care. As a matter of fact, the Republican plans do the exact opposite. Insurance for everybody? Of course not. You know that the plans they have, they've gone from 24 million people, fewer people with insurance, to 23 million people, fewer with insurance. Now to the Senate bill, oh, they're making progress. We're down to 22 million fewer people with insurance. Forget everybody. They just can't keep the people currently who have insurance keeping their insurance. Now, I did do some math on this on the hopeful side, and I try to be optimistic. At the rate Republicans are going, they've given us a different plan every 6 weeks. End of March, beginning of May, middle of June. And each 6 weeks, they've managed to find a way to keep another million people insured. That's pretty good. At the rate the Republicans are going after 7 years of planning, if they keep going with a new plan every 6 weeks, they'll have found a way to keep the number of insured people the same, not adding anyone, but by January 2020, they'll have come up with a plan where they keep everybody who's insured now on their insurance. Yay, Republicans! Or we could just stand up as a party and say, stop. We've got a system that's insuring millions more Americans than were insured 7 years ago before we passed the Affordable Care, before we Democrats passed the Affordable Care Act. We've got more people insured. We've got lower premiums than they would have otherwise, and I'll give you some stats on that in a moment. And there's a lot we forget about in the Affordable Care Act. There are a lot of measures for accountability in hospitals to make sure that we're getting better care. We've got more people insured, thanks to Democrats. We've got better care for Americans, thanks to Democrats. They're getting better insurance that covers more things like maternity and preventative care and prescription drugs. They're getting policies that they couldn't have gotten for this price 7 years ago. You want better care? You want cheaper care? You want insurance for, well, not everybody yet, we're working on that too, but for more people? You're voting Democrat. You're not voting for the plan that the Republicans are trying to give us. It's as simple as that. I say whoever's running for Congress, you go, oh my gosh, Donald Trump's going to take your insurance. You need to elect a Democratic congressperson who will stand against Donald Trump. Billy Sutton for governor, or if we get someone else to run for governor. The season is yet young. Primary's still 11 months away. Whoever our Democratic nominee for governor is, that governor can say, you know what? The feds are trying to take away your insurance. The feds, the Republicans in Washington, are trying to create a system where states can opt out and say, hey, you don't have to cover pre-existing conditions. You don't have to cover maternity or preventative care or prescription drugs. You don't have to cover people with pre-existing conditions. Or, well, you do, but you can charge them a lot more money. You can price them right out of their insurance. That's the trick. Christy Nome was in Rapid City yesterday saying, oh, I didn't vote to take away pre-existing conditions. No, she just voted for a plan that would allow states to allow insurance companies to price people with pre-existing conditions out of their insurance, just like they had used to do before we Democrats saved their hides with the Affordable Care Act. Don't fall for it. Christy Nome voted to take away coverage for pre-existing conditions, and now she wants to be governor? Huh. Our gubernatorial candidate needs to say, I, as governor, if the Republican plan passes, I will never apply for one of those waivers that would leave thousands of South Dakotans with pre-existing conditions hanging, that would leave your friends and your parents and your kids and your colleagues who have diabetes or need prescription drugs to treat their systems. I'm not going to leave those South Dakotans in the lurch. I'm going to protect their health care no matter what Congress does. That's what our gubernatorial candidate can run on. And even if the Republicans continue with their demonstrated incompetence over the last few months, they run the Congress, they hold the White House, and they haven't passed anything substantive yet, get a grip, get things done. If they continue with this incompetence and lack of performance, the Affordable Care Act will still be there. Medicaid expansion will still be there. That thing that Dennis Dugard has refused to do for 7 years just because a black man in the White House came up with it? Yeah, I'll say that and put that on the tape. I'm not afraid. That great plan that we came up with that Republicans resisted just because Obama did it, it's still going to be there. Our next Democratic governor could promise to say, hey, Affordable Care Act's still going. I will expand Medicaid. I will put 50,000 South Dakotans onto affordable health insurance. I will get 50,000 South Dakotans the health coverage they need to be getting preventative care. And to get back to work, to be healthy and contribute to the economy and take care of their kids and make sure they're good members of this society. Healthcare. Billy Sutton, anyone else who wants to run for governor, you don't need anything else to run on but that, because healthcare and health insurance hit every South Dakotan in the pocketbook. Everybody cares about this. You can win an election on that issue alone. Could have done a speech on that all my own. That's the 15-minute part. I'll give you a quick brief on the two others, and then we'll get to questions. I did mention election security. Last week, Donald Trump's Presidential Election Fraud Commission, you know, the commission he impaneled because millions of voters voted illegally last year, and his score would have been even bigger than his records. No. Lies. You know the drill. Donald Trump is lying and saying millions of people voted illegally. So he's got this commission that sent a letter to every Secretary of State in the country, and in some cases that was the wrong person. They didn't even know which official to send it to. More incompetence from the White House. But they said, hey, election officials, we want you to send us records on every registered voter, including their address, military status, voting history, and the last four digits of their Social Security number.
Yeah.
Okay, identity theft, anyone? You give me your name, your phone number, and your last four digits of your Social Security number, I'm going to be buying myself a fancy car on your credit card, or at least some fancy shoes, by the end of the day. And yet the President's Election Commission asked states to surrender that data? I mean, thank goodness, Chantel Krebs, I'll say nice things about her. She's got great shoes and some good sense. She said, no, we're not going to send that to Washington. It's illegal. We've got state law that says we can't surrender all of that data. Plus, you're supposed to pay money for it. You don't just get to ask. The voter registration file, you got to pay a fee. In South Dakota, Republicans aren't going to let you have anything without paying a fee. Not taxes, mind you, but a fee. There's an issue that I say everybody can look at that. You've got a president who's got no respect for the security of our data, our voter registration lists. This is something our Congress, governor, even Secretary of State, you know, one of those kind of down-ticket races people don't usually pay attention to. You give me a Democrat who cares about election rules, who's a real nerd on election law, and I'll give you a Democrat who can run around this state saying, you want your data protected? I will do it as your Secretary of State. You want to make sure our elections aren't hacked by the real threat to our elections? Which aren't individuals going in and voting twice. No, it doesn't happen. It hasn't shifted an election in this country yet. But if you want your election secured from the real threats that we've been talking about in the news this year, when the news isn't talking about healthcare, what's it talking about? Election hacking by our friends the Russians. Здравствуйте, Владимир Путин. I'm glad I speak Russian because I can read some of their websites and see what they're up to. But that's the real threat, is people hacking our elections. We need a Secretary of State candidate and legislative candidates will back them up who will say, we will protect our elections. We will protect your vote from the real threats to the integrity of our South Dakota elections and our American elections.
That's not just not handing over a bunch of data for free to Donald Trump and his flunkies. That's also making sure our data in peer in our election systems and in peer and in our courthouses are rock solid secure so that we're watching for that. That's an issue a Democrat can win on, protecting our ballots. And you know, if you'd like to ask questions about the Islamophobia and immigration one, we can go for that. But we're at 18 minutes now, and I said I'd give you folks time for questions. I appreciate your patience in a hot, stuffy room. Let's have it. Anything you're wondering about, I'm happy to talk about what we Democrats can do to win next year. And I'm going to start back there. Yes, sir.
Right. This morning it said 44 states have turned down to send their stuff in. But Presper, Stone, and Reynolds just voted this deal where they can give away. And I haven't seen one thing about it. The Democrat Party opposing that bill where they give this information away. I don't understand.
Yeah, well, and that, now, keep in mind, this wasn't a bill, thankfully. This was just a letter sent out hastily by Kansas' Secretary of State, who Trump picked to be on this commission with Mike Pence and all. And the thing is that the letter was poorly planned. They didn't even think about how we're going to coordinate this data. And they're collecting this data. They're telling the secretaries of state, email your data to this link or go through this website that anybody can get onto and at least see the URL. It's supposedly a secure military site. But, oh, yeah, let's all just email our data with the Russians watching. Come on. Yeah, and you're right. Thune and Rounds, they haven't said a thing about this. They haven't figured out how to just stand up for principle.
They voted for this one bill.
There was a bill on it, too?
They voted for this bill to give out all this information to internet or something.
Oh, you might be thinking of earlier in the year, the one where they let the internet service providers.
Yeah, that's
a different issue. Right, that's a privacy issue. You bet. Basically, they're saying, you know, if you get your internet through Midco or CenturyLink or Northern Valley Communications, whoever the other providers are, maybe in your neighborhood, that basically those providers now can sell all that data. Now, the thing is, in perspective, Google already does this.
Yeah.
You know, the search engines and other websites that get your data, they can sell it. So the internet service providers were saying, well, everybody else is selling data. We want to be able to sell that data, too, because your private data is pretty valuable to marketers who want to know what websites you look at. And yes, that's, now that I know what you're talking about, that bill is very problematic as well. They passed it, but you know, John and Mike and Christy too, they figure, hey, if businesses are going to make money on it, great. Your privacy is secondary. Your data, your personal security is secondary in their minds to the money they can make from big donors and big corporations.
And donate to their party.
And donate to their party, right. There's another issue, the whole overarching thing of business uber alles, business over everything. That whole theme of the corporate domination of America. If there's a Democrat out there who wants to run for legislature on that or for governor or whatever, that's another one. You can build a whole policy platform on that saying, look, regular individual folks aren't being heard. Big corporations, big lobbyists, big money, they're the ones being heard. We have to change that. Okay? That's another very important issue, and I'd agree with you. I'm glad you pointed out that bill. That's another problem our senators have, showing it shows who they work for and who they don't listen to. That would be us.
Yeah.
Other questions? Chuck, you had one fired up.
Yes, there was a story here in the last few days that we now have the lowest birth rate in the United States that we have ever had.
Nationwide.
And this is why we need immigrants, because if we're going to have somebody paying our Social Security, we've got to have people who aren't working.
One of the first things I heard about workforce is, hey, when you've got 2% unemployment, and really, when you've got 2% unemployment, the 2% who are unemployed are those folks who are temporarily between jobs, and then a bunch of people who probably are going to have a tough time getting a job anyway.
With like 2% unemployment.
Well, now, there is another issue, right? If we're including everybody, if we're looking at the reservations and all that, there is a question about how many people really do need jobs in South Dakota, and where do we need those jobs? That's a fair point. But the birth rate and the demographics issues, the fact is, in, you know, Aberdeen, and I think, you know, Huron has seen this for Pete's sake. Huron didn't have the bodies to go staff that turkey plant. Guys, the big money running that turkey plant knew that. They didn't have the investment money either. So they needed immigrant money through the EB-5 visa program to fund the plant.
Yep.
And then they needed immigrant labor, the Karen people, who've been happy to come to America, and bless them for doing so. Get away from religious oppression back home in Myanmar. Come here to Huron, where the worst thing you got to deal with is the fact it's 40 below sometimes. I'll take 40 below over political oppression. That's what a snowsuit is for. They were willing to come here and work. So both the money and the sweat
that has basically been, you know, Huron's economic renaissance, or at least its economic hold on tight and survive, has been based on immigrants, based on people who don't look like us, who are willing to come here and work their tails off to process turkeys, to do really unpleasant work. I mean, I don't want to process turkeys. I have a lot more fun making speeches than I do chopping up turkeys or beef up in Aberdeen or whatever the jobs are. Chuck's absolutely right. At the rate, you know, our birth rate just isn't high enough to replace the workers in the pipeline. Never mind pay for the Social Security and the, you know, the benefits and all that. New workers mean new taxpayers. New workers mean people who will do the jobs we need. Mow our lawns, take care of us in the hospital, take care of us in the nursing home, you know, fix our houses up, pave our roads. If we don't have enough workers, I mean, there's two places to get workers. All of us start making more babies. And I've got one. I think that's plenty. I'm done for now. And if we're not all going to make more babies, we better go find people who will make more babies. If those people want to come here from other countries, that's how we got here in the first place. If America didn't let, well, I know my Indian friends would be more than happy to have a policy that says, don't let anybody in. There was a time for that policy. Well, that time's over. If we want America to continue the way it is, healthy and strong, immigration is the best way to do that. Even Ronald Reagan said that. There's this wonderful statement he made back in 1982 about how this nation's strength rests on its ability to bring new people into the country. I'm paraphrasing. I got to go get the exact words, but I know I put this on a billboard up in Aberdeen last year. It's worth remembering. Even Ronald Reagan agreed. This nation's greatest strength is its ability to open its doors and say, you bet, come to America. There's a place for everybody here. Come here, work hard, stay out of other people's business, let them worship the way they want, let them live the way they want, follow the law, pay your taxes. That makes America great. That makes America great. Mary, and then I'll come over to Charlie.
The immigrants come here are having enough babies that one day those immigrant children are the ones that are going to defend democracy. Because like you say, white people are not having enough babies. And they showed the picture of when Fitzgerald was in his little accident. All seven of those pictures they showed had to be immigrant children. They didn't have names that were Olson and Davis and not highly
Yeah. Yeah, the country's going to change. Yeah, I know something about having a name that kind of sticks out on the roster there. But yeah, the country is going to be filled with lots of different people. People whose names don't sound like ours. That's how America works. That change has happened, and that's how America stays strong. We welcome new people, and we have faith in our values. See, here's the thing. I think a lot of people are afraid that if people who don't look like us and sound like us and have the same last name, they're afraid that different people are going to come to America and not uphold American values. I say nuts to that. Because I still believe American values are the best in the world. I mean, the real ones, not the values that elect some fake capitalist to the country to lie from the White House. Not those mistakes. I mean real American values. Freedom, democracy, liberty and justice and opportunity for all. That's America's greatest strength. It's not our natural resources. It's not our ag economy. I mean, those are important. It's not our guns. It's not our nuclear missiles. It's our principles. And I believe firmly, you bring me people from Myanmar and Mexico and Somalia and Syria, you bring them here, you let them be in America, and you let them see what pluralistic democracy looks like, they're not going to want to go to some kind of theocratic dictatorship. They're going to see how the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, all how the Constitution works, and go, you know what, that's a good system. As surely as, and this is from a comedy show called Master of None on Netflix, main character is Dev. He's from India. He's Muslim. But they show him growing up, and he's at a neighbor's house, and they're eating bacon. He's like, oh, we Muslims don't eat pork. And they're like, your mom's not here. Try it. And he tries that bacon. He's like, dang, this is good. I'm going to eat bacon. This is wonderful. American democracy is like bacon. Get people to try it. They'll eat it the rest of their lives. Charlie, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wondered what your assessment was, because I've been saying for quite a while when the Supreme Court opened the floodgates to dark money, I personally think that was the start of our downfall of our democracy.
The idea of dark money, of contributions that we can't track, or we don't know who's saying things, I think that is a problem. I recognize that constitutionally it's difficult to say that so-and-so can't speak,
And then there's that whole hairy thing of, well, there's speech and there's money. Why is money speech? That's the principle the Supreme Court has enunciated, that contributions are speech and thus are protected by the First Amendment. It's tough to outlaw anonymous speech, especially when we have a country that was founded on, you know, with the founding fathers arguing in the Federalist Papers under pseudonyms. You know, Publius and that saying, well, I'm not going to give you my name, but here's what I think about democracy. A lot of that debate was conducted anonymously. I don't like that. I think if I had been around in 1787, I'd have been, Publius, who's he? He's probably working for King George. Nuts to that. I want someone to put their name to it. I agree that accountability is necessary for democracy. If you're going to participate in democracy, if you're going to participate in the public square, you need to have the courage to put your name to it. And we've got to not be afraid to put our names to the things we say. I don't have a good legislative or constitutional fix for that problem of dark money. But I think it's interesting that even Mark Mickelson, the Speaker of the House from down in Sioux Falls, he was going to run for governor, but apparently he's discovered ballot measures instead. He's put in three ballot measures that he wants us to sign petitions for, and one of them is to challenge dark money in ballot question measures. Now, I still don't trust Mark Mickelson.
No.
I think he's just doing that because he just doesn't like ballot measures, because ballot measures mean we the people get to vote on stuff. He doesn't want that. He wants the legislature controlled by him with the speaker's gavel to vote on stuff. So I don't trust him. Sorry, Mark, I just don't trust you on this one.
You shouldn't.
Buddy, I'll take Peggy's word on that. But even he is offering a measure where basically Republicans are going to be defending the idea that dark money is bad and we need to get rid of it. Whether he's willing to say that about his friends, the Koch brothers, well, we'll see. But it's a good point.
Yeah.
Other questions if we've got time? Dennis, then we'll go back to see Harvey.
Yeah. I see you mentioned about Noman and the press conference or the open forum that she had. And I listened to some of those speakers on video and stuff that somebody recorded. And very passionate, very, very succinct in regards to how they couldn't get coverage. And they talked about how they got it. And they talked about they couldn't afford it without the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
She comes back and just says, you know, her comment naturally, and I seen her at one of her things, her thing is that, oh, Obamacare is going down the tubes. The costs are going so extravagantly. And the only thing is, you know, like, normal people don't go read those things, but there's so many things in there that takes away from everybody and gives to the rich. And they're hidden in the things, so they don't do it. But how do you address Kristi Noem or any of the other Republicans that stand there and say, well, we have to do something because it's just going, we can't afford it. Something's got to be done.
Yeah.
And I realize if it was me, I would say, well, then let's work and fix what we got. So what they
yep.
need to be done.
Yep.
But I mean, how do you address that? Because she shuts her down right there, just like the fact she says right at the beginning of her thing, about the first or second question, she'll say, well, you know, I'm covered by Obamacare. All right. She's a federal employee. You know, Chuck Grassley from my home state, you know, he said that all these senators and congressmen had to take Obamacare. What he didn't state was that, well, that we got to take it, but they get the same benefits as a federal employee and the same cause, but we
right.
won't tell anybody else on that one.
Yeah, and I, for the most part, I'm not going to take my cues on health insurance from a lady who's making $174,000 a year on my tax dollars and a husband who's got then his second job making I don't know how many thousands of dollars a year selling federally subsidized health insurance or crop insurance. So Kristi Noem is not the problem. Somebody making six figures, her salary and her probably husband's salary, isn't in a position to talk about the struggles of working Americans who can barely afford their health insurance. That's my first response. My second response is how the audience responded in Rapid City yesterday. Kristi was going off and she said, well, if we don't do something, if we don't pass this plan, we're going to end up with government-run health care in a year or two. And everybody applauded.
Yeah. Yeah.
Loud and proud. Single payer? Okay.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid
Absolutely.
To say it. I mean,
yeah.
I did a poll on my blog, which has a margin of error the size of a couple broadsides of a barn. But 61% of the people who responded to my poll said, you bet, single payer.
Yep.
Now, that's a bunch of liberal Democrats reading a blog along with some Republican cranks. But 61% on my blog say, single payer, you bet. It's efficient. It's simple. It lowers costs for the federal
like
government.
Medicare.
And you want to talk yep. about portability across state lines?
Yeah.
I mean, there's an issue that Kristi and Mike always like to talk about. Well, if we just let states sell insurance across state lines to privately, everything would be better. Subpoint A, Obamacare already allows states to form compacts to do that, but none of the insurers have said they want to do it.
Yep.
Subpoint B, okay, fine, I'll trade you. You want to sell private insurance across state lines? Great. Why not do Medicare then?
Yep.
Because last I checked, no matter what state you're in, you get in your RV, you're on Medicare, you're covered wherever you go. I'm fine with that. Give me Medicare as a public option. A bunch of my readers said they're okay with that too. As long as we have that option to guarantee everybody can get insurance if they want it, go ahead and let Christy and her federally subsidized husband buy their gold-plated plans with their six-figure salaries. That's fine with me. But make sure everybody can get insurance the way Donald Trump promised we were going to do. Medicare for everybody would do that.
Yep.
That's the other way I'd respond. The third thing, and I'll give you a quick cost number. I know Chuck's getting ready, and Harvey's got a question still, too. Christy cited this number that premiums on the individual market have gone up 124% in South Dakota. 124% premium increase. Christy cites this number. Mike Brown cites this number. John Thune cites this number. Donald Trump cites this number. That number comes from an honest-to-goodness report from May from the Department of Health and Human Services. That report has a really important footnote. It says this 124% increase does not reflect the tax subsidy credit that people can get for premiums.
Right.
Go look online. There's lots of information about this. But basically, yeah, the premium itself has gone up. But when you go look at the tax subsidy that regular working South Dakotans, not rich Christy and rich husband Byron can get, but regular working South Dakotans, you look at the tax subsidy you're going to get, you're paying less now for a policy on the individual market than you would have paid in 2009 for a comparable policy, thanks to those tax credits that Barack Obama and we Democrats got for you to make your insurance affordable. Plus, and now we're on like subpoint H, that also assumes that you could have even gotten an individual market health policy that would cover maternity and prescription drugs and preventative care and all those essential health benefits that Obamacare says have to be in any decent health plan. So when Christy talks about premiums going up, 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 she's ignoring the tax subsidies that Obamacare gives that she wants to take away, and she's ignoring the fact that we're talking about policies, apples and oranges. You couldn't even get policies like this before Obamacare.
Right. That's right.
Obamacare is giving you better care, better coverage for less money than it would have cost before, and it's delivering that coverage to more Americans. And Christie's plan only takes all three of those metrics in the opposite direction. Worse coverage, more expensive out-of-pocket costs, if you even get coverage, and fewer Americans with insurance. That's how I respond to Christy Nome, and that's how I hope our House candidate will, because she is dead wrong on her defense of her votes this year. Harvey, you had a question, and I'll work around.
Yeah, you kind of worked that one over pretty well. But I just wanted to share that about 3 years ago, during the fair, I was sitting at the Democrat booth, sitting with two of my favorite Democrats in my life, Ben Radcliffe and George McGovern, just we three sitting there talking. And we got into the health care thing, and some old stuff now. And he said, we need single-payer insurance. And then I asked George McGovern, if you could rewrite the health care bill, how many pages would it be? Pages hell, he said, it'd be one sentence. Extend Social Security to everybody, because we know how to do that. And then everybody that has a salary, a percentage of that salary goes to that big fund. And you get rid of all these CEOs of the huge insurance companies, some of them are getting $25 million. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't care about Christy Nome's $170,000. That doesn't mean anything. But the people that were overpaying to rob the poor people of this country are the ones that make me sick. Well, anyway, I think we should be bolder in talking about that. Another thing I wanted to raise that hasn't been mentioned, but one of the things I was so proud about that Obama did, many things that he did, he's finally opened the gateway to Cuba.
Yes.
That we're going to normalize relations, we're going to get rid of the and then this current president, I watch this now because I don't want to be put in the no-fly list because I'm going to cross the pond.
That's why I bring a child to these events, to keep it nice.
But imagine reversing something that's starting to work. Yeah. And if we ever want tensions in this world to go away, we do it by trading and traveling and talking and understanding and forgetting sometimes ugly history. And why we have such a hard time doing that, I don't know. And you don't have to be just sugary nice like I always am. But, I mean, it's because it was Obama's idea.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's a sickness. That's a sick church.
It's a racist sickness.
And we need to, if we want to revitalize the Democratic Party in this state, and it needs it, and I'm not being critical, particularly just descriptive, I think we have to be more of an educational body to say, folks, what's wrong with the way you're thinking? Can't you see that we can move in the right direction? Can't you see that? Get over it. And when you watch this news day after day, which has turned into a harangue instead of an educational experience. And there's just some things that frustrate me. But let's not give up the ship.
Absolutely. There's a lot to agree with. I don't know which one I'd start with on. I would mention maybe on Cuba at least, I would agree completely. And we've engaged with far nations that pose far greater threats to our nation than little Cuba.
Yeah.
Cuba's no longer a Soviet base.
It's so simple. The reason they're doing this is because they're concerned about the electoral votes in the state of Florida.
Yep.
That's correct.
Yep.
That's what it's all about. The whole country of Cuba and the whole country of the United States suffers over the fact that they might lose electoral voters.
And there, I mean, there's a good example where Barack Obama, I mean, he was certainly concerned about winning elections, but he showed the courage to say, you know what? I think we can do this new policy. I don't know if he had guys inside saying, we could still win Florida if we do it, because the generations are shifting, and the older generation that's absolutely anti-Castro is dying off, and the younger Cubans just want to go back and forth. But Barack Obama did the right thing. He said, we can, just like the rhubarb pie that I mentioned at the beginning, we can still engage Cuba, do trade, help our, you know, ag, you want to talk business, okay, farmers, you always want more markets. Cuba's a market. Sell them some grain, for Pete's sake. Open that market up. Optimize our opportunities. We can still do all that and still look at Raul Castro or whoever replaces him and say, by the way, it's just dirty pool putting political prisoners in jail. You don't jail people for speaking up. We can have those forthright differences and still trade and engage, as we do with Russia, as we do with China, as we do with any number of nations where we may disagree with an issue.
I thought Tony Oliva was a pretty good Cuban. He married my neighbor's daughter. He's been an exemplary citizen. When he was here, I talked to his parents, best I could, in his books in Spanish. And I've talked to Tony about it quite a bit. And there are hundreds of thousands of Cubans like him that love America, don't want their parents to be almost enslaved.
Yep.
Castros are dying. The new thing is going to take over. They're not a threat to us militarily in any way.
Mm-hmm. No.
So why not, just as an example,
in
this whole wall business is sort of fading away now. But all these things, it has to stand the test of reason. And that's part of our job, too.
Yep.
Harvey, you know, the only reason that they're going back on that is because of Obama.
That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely. I can put up with that every morning with the coffee.
It's racism, racism, racism.
I mean, he's I told him one day he's a racist.
Yeah.
No question. He's a racist. And I said, if a Republican did what Obama did, you'd say, oh, hell, that was great.
No question.
What we need.
Yeah. You had a question, sir.
Speculate if you would for me, because I am disappointed in the Democrats for not making a good point of the tax credits offsetting the cost of insurance raises, because they've done a real poor job of making that clear. And you got a large section of the population that ain't never going to bring it up, and another subdegree of that population who doesn't understand it.
Right.
Because they're getting torqued because their insurance is going up, but they quite frankly don't get where this other money's coming from.
Yep.
We're making a real poor effort at making the connection.
Yep.
I think it's a real, real bad misjudgment on somebody's part not to point that out on a daily basis.
And it's tough because the first thing there is, yes, it's complicated.
Framing.
And that's I mean, I hate health insurance. I don't like thinking about health insurance. Before and even during the Affordable Care Act, I hate it when I have to figure out what plan I'm on. I want insurance to just happen. I'll pay my like I did. Well, I was in Canada for a bit when my wife did graduate studies. Health insurance up there, no sweat. You pay an extra amount on your taxes. I think it was like $80 a month, and we got our insurance.
Yeah.
Done. Now, and that's just the insurance side. Now you get sick, you go to the hospital, whatever. But the fact is, I mean, it's not free. And that's an important point, too. People like say, oh, you just want free health care. I'm like, no. I don't want free health care. I want to spend my dollars as efficiently as possible by paying just taxes like everybody else will for the biggest possible insurance pool we can get, which is all 320 million Americans all paying into Medicare and all getting that single payer to guarantee their bills are covered. Done. Simple, efficient, no $25 million CEO salaries. Done.
Many of them. Yep.
Health insurance is complicated. I wish it were simpler, and that's why I like single payer, because it saves lives and saves money. In terms of explaining the affordable health care, yes, I would agree. What candidates need to be able to explain it to people is kind of a brief sheet where they need to get someone to do that math for them and be able to say, okay, so you're this old, you're in this situation, you live here. Okay, here's what your premiums are in the marketplace. This is your income. These are the tax subsidies you get. Bottom line, here's what's coming out of your pocket. And that takes some math and some spreadsheets and some policy knowledge to do. But that's how to bring it home to people. We, instead of that, like Christie shouting, oh, the premiums have gone up 124%. Mm-hmm. We Democrats, and I'm bad at this, about this. I love to talk policy and talk all those nitty-gritty bits and pieces and cite websites and this and that. When it comes to campaigning and you've got 15 seconds to make each point instead of beating it to death the way I do, you've got 15 seconds to get it across to the person. So that's why you need your sheet where you can walk up to someone and says, well, I don't know, my health insurance costs a lot more. Where you can say to them, how old are you? How much do you make? Boop, 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 boop. Here's what your cost is compared to what it would be without Obamacare. And I just saw a chart this morning that says without those tax subsidies, without the Affordable Care Act, those comparable premiums would be 30% to 50% more now. So maybe you boil it down to that. You can say, you know what? If Obama hadn't given you this plan, you'd be paying 30% to 50% more. If your premium for the year is $1,000 or whatever, you'd be paying $1,500 for it now, and yep. So on and so on. And that's the challenge, to break it.
It's a net cost issue, but nobody's floating that out.
Well, and it's tough to do. And as you can see, I'm not even good at it. It takes me a while to explain it all, by which time people are going, yeah, but Republicans, yay. To win on healthcare, Democrats need to be well-informed, and we need to practice it, we need to know the numbers, and boil it down into those snappy points. Now, the thing I like about it is, everybody's got health bills, or they know someone who does. And so if you can get it to that dollar figure, and if you can boil it down to, Christy Noem's going to make your insurance go up 50%, boom. If any number argument can get there, that argument can get it there. And then if someone says, 50%, really, show me your figures. Then you whip out Dakota Free Press and show them the 10 links I have to the studies that prove that. But for the person at the door, we just hit that hard. Christy Noem's going to take your insurance away. You got diabetes, you're not going to be insured. Your premium's going to go up 50%. Hit them with that and put Christy on defense. Make her prove it otherwise. Yes. Not Wendy, it was...
Jean.
Yes, yeah. Jean.
I think what we need to get away from, and this is not a criticism by any means, but the negativity. Let's not keep attacking people. Let's bring an alternative that's positive. So people will go out and vote and not turn away from that privilege that we have of saying, I don't like, let's just use an example, Hillary or Trump. I'm not even going to vote. We have to get people out to vote. And we have to get people registered. We have to get people active. Like you said, we have to educate them, but let's stop the naysaying of, you know, she's not good for us. Let's just say, look, this would be better. And that's how I feel about it. I just think we have so much negativity, especially in politics. People don't even want to talk politics.
Well, Gina,
and that's our future.
I struggle with that very issue. You know what I mean? And, you know, coaching, this, now, remember, I'm coming from a perspective of having coached debate, done high school debate.
Well,
and a lot
a
of this kind of discourse.
Professor.
You understand these things. And I understand there's a lot of discourse out there about all the negativity in our system. I grapple with that. And I understand there are some people who will hear negativity and just shut it off.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the wall I hit is, when there are bad things in the world, I have to say, that's a bad thing. We should not do it. I'm compelled to use negative language. But they don't vote like that. And I have to say to people, you need to vote to avoid this bad thing, this bad thing, this bad thing. And I'll follow that up and I'll give them something good. I'll say, the good alternative you have is the Affordable Care Act.
And here are the things about the Affordable Care Act will fix: getting Medicaid expanded in every state, for instance. That'd be a good step for South Dakota. There's a good specific one right here. We can talk about other reforms and maybe doing some actual cost controls, allowing the feds overall, not just the VA, but all the feds, to negotiate on prescription drug prices. We can come up with alternatives. But I'm a firm believer in the idea that we have to not only present alternatives. You know, I mean, I'll stand here all day and say, my alternative is single payer. Let's do single payer. Bernie Sanders, yay. But to sell that, I have to be able to say to people, by the way, here's what's wrong with your current system. And here's what's even worse about what the Republicans will do to you if you let them win this election. So for me, there's always that balance. And I know some people don't like the negative, but I've got to do both. I am compelled to say Christie's plan is a terrible plan. And I will paint it in the worst polite language, intelligent, honest language available to make clear to people what's at stake, what they will lose if we vote for Christie's plan. And then I will also have another plan that says, here's what we've got now and why it's great, and here's how we can make it even greater if you give me your Democratic votes. But it's a tough point, and I respect that, and if there are candidates who say, I'm not going to do negative campaigning, I'm like, no sweat. You make your choices. You figure out what rhetoric fits you. And again, I'm the guy who only got 39% in District 3 against the guy who sent out 4 really negative campaign cards talking about what an evil monster I am. Negative campaigning, it's tempting. It's evil, but it's tempting. Ooh, there's Darth Vader stuff. Folks, thank you so much for coming to lunch. Glad to have you there.
That's this week's Dakota Free Press podcast. Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear here and you'd like some more podcasts, feel free to see our archive on dakotafreepress.com. You can also support the podcast and Dakota Free Press with your PayPal contribution. You'll see a link to the tip jar right below the podcast here on the blog and on the SoundCloud version of the podcast. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions for future podcasts, give me a shout, Corey, C-O-R-Y, at DakotaFreePress.com. Once again, I'm Corey Heidelberger, host of the Dakota Free Press podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.